Hey Matt, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, before we start, can you just give us a couple of sentences about who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, so my name's Matt Anderson. I'm a native of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm on my way to move to Washington, D.C. via Missoula, Montana, Greensboro, North Carolina, and I've been a social worker, largely in the child welfare field for the last 20 plus years. And a lot of that time has been in the policy realm.
Nice. That's a good, cool introduction. Thanks so much for doing that. Let's go and do a little bit of rapid fire questions.
Okay.
If you had all the money in the world, what would you do with it?
All of the money in the world, I would, I would distribute it equally so everybody had enough to live the life of their dreams.
Nice. What would you do if you weren't in the space of government relations?
Oh wow. So there's two things that come to mind. One is when I get really stressed and overwhelmed by the never-ending nature of the work. Like, we never actually totally solve or fix things, right? Today's solutions are tomorrow's problems. So when I get kind of deep in that place, I'm like, ah, I should just be a landscaper. Go cut grass for a living. Grass is tall, grass is short, feels good. So I think about that a lot. But really, I would be a professional snowboarder.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep thinking about the grass cutting piece too. So we are in the same boat, I guess. What do you think is important for in a child's education so that way they are more involved in the government and the government processes? What could be changed in the education?
I mean, I'm just thinking back to my own like childhood. So I'm thinking like middle or yeah, middle school, high school. I think we just have to make it real. You know, policy, public policy affects our lives every single day, whether we realize it or not. And so I think that we don't do anywhere near a good enough job in public education or middle school, high school, of helping young people understand the relevance to their lives and why it's important, and you know, and like what this kind of profession is. I don't know if we expose young people at all to what this profession is all about and what good you can do in the world.
And how would you describe the profession of lobbying to someone who is thinking about getting into this space?
Yeah. I would say first, and we mentioned this before we jumped on here, is that, you know, politicians, especially right now in 2023, politicians do not have a great reputation. And I would say that lobbyists, as an extension of that, probably have an even worse reputation. And so I think that's real. I spent 10 years as a lobbyist, and so I had to deal with that, you know, in a very personal way. But I think that, you know, the profession is about, you know, I see politicians. This is the story I would tell myself as I was on Jones Street in Raleigh. I would tell myself that politicians are professional problem solvers. That's their job at the end of the day. They're trying to solve problems to make life, to make the world, to make, you know, policy better for people. That's what they should be there to do. And that was the image that I had, but I realized that they don't know what all the problems are, and they definitely don't know what all the solutions to all the problems are. So that's where I saw my job as the lobbyist. My job was to help them understand, here are a set of problems that a certain group of people are dealing with, and let's work together to try to find solutions. And I think I might have some ideas for what those solutions are, and let's see if we can't build some consensus around making the world a better place for people. And that's kind of the way I thought about it. And then at the end of the day, this is a relational profession. This is a relationship-driven job. You connect with people, get to know people, build trust with people, build coalition and collaboration with people. And then together, you know, you find the best path forward, you know, to bring forth some solutions that really matter. And so I think that's maybe a long answer. I don't know, but that's a little bit of how I kind of see the profession.
And Like, do you feel like, if you're not a people person, do you think you should not get into this profession?
It's a good question. Yeah, probably not, to be quite honest. If you don't like people, I don't want to say it that way. You know, I'm an introvert. And so a lot of people think of introverts as, you know, you're very shy and withdrawn, and maybe you're not really a people person. Not true. I mean, I'm very much a people person. I'm curious about people. I like people. I'm relational. But it just wears me out. If I spend all day, you know, walking the halls of the General Assembly, by the time I get home at the end of the day, I'm done. I don't want to talk. I don't want to do anything. Like, I need to just calm and relax and go to bed. So I think you have to be self-aware of what kind of person you are. But this is, to be a lobbyist, to be in governmental affairs, I mean, you are in the people relationship business, and you have to enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy what you're doing, if it doesn't give you energy and excitement and doesn't tap into your creativity, it's not the job for you. So I think that you have to, you know, I think you have to love being with people and working with people.
And you, did you stumble into, you said your focus is child welfare, right?
Yeah.
So did you stumble into it, or did you always have this passion towards it?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I did. So my undergrad degree was actually liberal studies. So very broad degree with a minor in psychology, but also a minor, almost a minor, in political science and environmental studies. And so there was a lot of intersection of like people, problems, policy, you know, in my undergrad, but I never thought about like being a lobbyist or being in policy or anything like that. So the seeds were there, but I did stumble into it as a social worker. So my first job in child welfare in 2007 was, I was working with kids who were aging out of foster care. And we won't get into it here, but there are a lot of problems to be solved, particularly for that group of kids who age out of the foster care system, meaning they turn 18 and the government walks away and says, you're on your own. And it's a setup for failure for those kids. And that's the population that I was working with and building relationships with and getting to know. And I stumbled into this simple practice that I use today, and it's listen, learn, act. So listen to people's stories, learn from their expertise, and take action with them. And so I started to do that with kids aging out. Another very long story short, we made a feature documentary film about America's foster care system. And what the kids in the film said is that they wanted their story to be heard by people that could make the system better. And so we started asking ourselves, well, who are those people? We're like, okay, who are your parents when you're in foster care? Well, the government is your parent when you're in foster care. So we felt like who we really needed to share their story, their truth with was elected officials, people that were in government making decisions, policy decisions about what happened to these kids and their lives. And it was that then got us to Washington, D.C. in 2009. And that was really my first experience with, you know, really doing policy work in a sense. And so we were working at the time. I mean, I was 28 years old, maybe 29 years. I had no business sitting in the office of Senator Chuck Grassley or Senator Mary Landrieu, and some others as well. But Chuck Grassley was the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. And so he was in one of the most powerful positions in Congress at the time. And that committee oversees Title IV-E, which is the federal financing for our child welfare system in this country. And so, yeah, I mean, there we were, you know, me and two kids who aged out of foster care in Montana, sitting in his office saying, how are we going to stop this issue of kids aging out of foster care and then, you know, falling through the cracks of society? And, you know, that led to a whole series of things that followed over the next couple years. But it was a stumble, to be more succinct. I stumbled my way into policy. But I followed the truth of what these young people wanted to see happen, which is they wanted the system to be better for the kids coming up behind them.
That's really inspiring.
Yeah.
And would you say people or like anyone who wants to get into this field,
Yeah.
do you think they should first figure out what is it that they want to get behind and then get into policy? Or should they first learn the ins and outs of the profession and then figure out which policy they want to work for?
I think you have to know what your values are, what you believe in. I think you have to know what issues are important to you. And I think you have to know who the people are that are being impacted by those issues. I think you have to be in relationship with those people. You have to understand what their needs, wants, and desires are. And then you get into policy work. If you do it the other way around, there's a lot of power in government. There's a lot of power in the seats of elected officials. And whether you're in those seats or lobbying with people in those seats, power corrupts. I think it's a reality of life, of the human experience. And I think if you go into it because you just want to be doing policy work and you want to have that sort of like position of some power, I think that's dangerous. I really do. I really think that policy has to be for the people. And so if you don't know who the people are and you don't know what they're for and what they stand for and what they want in life, then I think you can get really misguided. And I think it can be not a good place to be. So that's, yeah, at least that's my position. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. And what is the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice around policy kind of work?
Sure.
Yeah.
Or in general in life.
Yeah.
Which you kind of adhere to.
Mm-hmm. You can probably edit out long pauses, right?
That's fine.
Yeah, good. You know, yeah, there's a bunch of different things that are running through my head. I want to share this story. This was the first time I was going to Capitol Hill. I was leaving from Missoula, Montana, and the two young people who I was working on this film with were coming with me. Rafe was one of them. Rafe at the time was living on the streets, hopping trains, traveling the country. And he was a self-described street kid, and he wore these pants that he called his dumpster pants. And I said to him, Rafe, you know, we're going to Capitol Hill. There's kind of an attire there, maybe like, you know, get some, you know, some dress clothes. And he looked at me, he was like, nope, like, I'm not doing it. He's like, I will shake their hands the same exact way, whether I'm in a suit and tie or my dumpster pants. And he was right, I was wrong at the end of the day. So what's the advice or what's the lesson in that? You know, meet people where they are. You know, see the fullness, see the unshakable goodness in people, believe in people, and don't put your own judgments and values on people. And I think that we need that kind of realness and rawness in policy work. You know, I think people need to show up as who they are and express who they are. And I think those of us that might sit in a position of power should just meet people right there. And I think that's a beautiful thing to do. And I didn't know how true that was until Rafe set me straight that day. So,
wow, that's amazing. I mean, how old was he
when you? Oh, at the time he was 18.
Oh man, see,
yeah, he was 18 years old.
That's amazing. The mm-hmm. amount of self awareness.
And you know what? You know what he did actually after that day. Instead of, you know, he convinced me, or I don't think there was no convincing. He didn't care. He was not going to wear anything but the dumpster pants. But what he did instead of the suit, he went and got a big tattoo on the side of his face. And he showed up and testified on Capitol Hill to the Senate Caucus on Foster Youth with Senator Grassley and Senator Landrieu in the room and a whole bunch of leaders in child welfare around the table. And he said to them, look, you know, I may look tough. I may look like a bad kid with a big face tattoo, but I have a heart that would swallow everybody in this room.
Wow.
And it just like, I mean, I get chills every time I think about that or share that story. But the truth of that is like, you know, see me for who I am, you know, see the fullness of who I am and treat me with the dignity and respect that I deserve as a human being. And I think if we're making policy from that place of seeing the humanity in people, then I think we're on the right track.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing that story, Andrew. If you're listening to this, kudos to you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's an amazing guy.
Let's switch a little bit into your personality. How would you describe yourself in one word?
Laid back. I don't know. I'm kind of a cool, calm, collected for the most part.
Nice. What is your favorite music?
My favorite music. You know, I listen to a lot of I listen to a lot of reggae music, a lot of hip hop music, and then I listen to a lot of what might be considered like hippie, like Grateful Dead and, you know, this kind of stuff. So a little bit of a mix. Maybe that's part of my personality. I'm a little eclectic. Creativity is a big part of who I am.
What is the most daring thing you've done outside of work?
The most daring thing I've done?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I mentioned if I wasn't in this field, I'd be a professional snowboarder.
Yeah.
So I push the limits to the extent of my abilities anyway. I'm not, you know, I'm not Sean White out here. But yeah, I pushed pretty hard on my snowboard and it caught up with me last winter. I jumped off a cliff and ended up with a broken nose. So
wow. Where was this?
It was in Montana. I was actually back in Missoula, Montana last winter. So
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was a great day. It was actually the last run. I was like, all right, one more run, and sure enough, that's the one that got me.
What is the best compliment you've ever received?
You know, I don't know if it's a compliment or not, but maybe I'll just kind of keep with the theme here. But I think that, you know, what means the most to me is that, you know, Rafe, who I've mentioned a few times, right? Rafe, I met when he was 17 years old and about to age out of foster care, and that was in 2007. And so here we are now in 2023, and we're still connected. And, you know, that relationship, that friendship means a lot to me. And the fact that he trusted me, you know, not only just with his story, but, you know, trusted me to represent him, trusted me to be his friend, you know, that means a lot to me.
If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would those be?
Yeah. So the three people... How can I make this eclectic? You know, Bob Marley comes to mind. I mentioned my love of reggae music. The last concert he played was Pittsburgh, 1979. So I just missed that. I think I was a few months old during that show. But he, you know, in a lot of ways, he's had an influence on me and my perspective on the world. So him, my grandfather, who's passed away as well, big influence on me. I miss him all the time. I'd love to have a chance to see him again. I'd be fascinated to see what the two of them talked about. So I think those two, and then this is an oddball one that probably most people won't know. His name's Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh yeah, I know.
And you know him, Gary V.
Yeah, is his. He's pretty cool.
yeah. His he's had a big influence on me too in a lot of different ways. And he is just he fascinates me, you know, kind of the way he comes at business and media and storytelling from this place of like deeply grounded in values of kindness and compassion and humility and ambition and patience and just this interesting mix. I really resonate with that. And so, yeah, I think that'd be my three. That's awesome.
You know, a side note is it was actually Gary V. I was listening to some podcast of his, and because of him, actually, I started this podcast. He said, like, you know, you should have your own podcast to talk to people and all. And that's, I mean, this was like, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And now you're, I think, you know, I've done about 100 people, I think, so
no
far.
Kidding.
Right?
Good for you. That's a big milestone. Wow, that's amazing. I'm about to launch my second podcast. So October 4th is the planned launch date for the Proximity Process. So that'll be my second podcast. I did Seen Out Loud, which is still out there. And then Proximity Process is coming. And same thing. Yeah, I don't think I would have gotten to that point without Gary Vee's influence of, tell your story, document your life. And that's what the new podcast is really documenting, partly documenting my process of how I've sort of transformed as a leader in child welfare the last couple of years. And he's great.
So if people had to listen to any of these podcasts, where could they go again?
Yeah. So Seen Out Loud is the first podcast I did, two seasons of that. And so that's on, Apple and Spotify and it's everywhere. And then the Proximity Process will come out October 4th, episode 1 will drop, and that'll be everywhere as well.
Thanks. Cool.
Yeah.
So with that, let's go a little bit into your past. So tell us a little bit. I know you've touched a little bit on as to how you got into child welfare, but when you were a child, tell us how were you passionate about politics, policy? What was going on back then? And where did you grow up?
Yeah, I mean, so I grew up in Pittsburgh, youngest of six kids, but a little bit of a Brady Bunch, multiple marriages, divorces, half siblings, all that kind of stuff. So I was the youngest of six. And I grew up, I think that I was more interested in sports. I was skateboarding, snowboarding, playing lacrosse, all that kind of stuff growing up, and mountain biking and backpacking. And I was really into the outdoors in high school. I was not interested in school, to be quite honest. Maybe that's the creative sort of entrepreneurial bone in me. It just, school didn't fit for me in high school. And so I wasn't thinking politics, policy. I wasn't involved in any like extracurricular activities with student body government or any of that. That wasn't anywhere near my world at that time. The interest in the outdoors and outdoor activities took me to Montana. I went to college there, did my undergrad there, did a master's of social work there at the University of Montana. And it was there that I fell in love with learning and education. And then got really interested in political science. And then as a master's of social work, I just realized that, you can do direct practice and serve individual people, clients, that sort of thing. But everybody lives in the context of the world around us, which is largely shaped by policy. And so I thought that, well, maybe the best way to have impact is not at the individual level, but at more of the macro public policy level. How do we impact the context in which people live and not just, individual behaviors as like a therapist or something like that. And so I think that's when I got really, really interested in public policy and governmental affairs and that sort of thing.
When did you move to North Carolina and why?
Yeah, I moved to North Carolina in the fall of 2011. The film that I mentioned, From Place to Place, the documentary, had come out that spring. And so I was out, traveling the country with the film, screenings, film festivals, actually not so much film festivals, a little bit, but mostly screenings around the country, and was just sort of like, okay, what's going to be next? And an opportunity came along to work for Children's Home Society of North Carolina. And so I took a job there and started there at the end of 2011 and worked there for 11 years. And that's where I eventually got into being a lobbyist, an actual, registered lobbyist.
And what was your takeaways? Like, what did you learn from that 10 to 11 years of experience, which, if you had to put it in a nutshell, what did you learn from it that other people can learn from you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that I learned that I think about a lot is that the legislative process is accessible and available to us. You don't even have to be a registered lobbyist, right? I mean, you can go to Raleigh and go to Jones Street and go to the General Assembly and you can meet with your elected officials. And the doors are open, you know? And I think that was the first thing that I really took away was that, wow, this isn't something out there that, you know, regular people like me can't go and be a part of, you know? So I think that was a big takeaway for me. I think the other thing was just sort of to be quite honest, a little bit of the chaos of how things get done. And, you know, you get behind the scenes and you see how things really happen. And, you know, it's amazing that things actually get done with how much is happening and how fast things can be moving. And, you know, then how slow things can be moving and how many things are moving. It's a little crazy making, but it gets done at the end of the day. But it doesn't always get done the right way or the best way or particularly well all the time. And I think it's not only accessible to us. I think that, you know, if we're concerned about the quality of sort of the, you know, the quality of life for our fellow citizens, then I think we should take the opportunity to go be part of the process. You know, if policy is being made without the people's voice being represented, it's not going to be the best policy. And I think, you know, just the importance of being a participant, you know, really stuck with me.
And looking towards your future, like, where do you see yourself? You said you're moving to DC.
Yeah.
So what is the thing which is, you know, exciting for you in the future?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm obviously super excited about what I'm doing now. You know, I left my job a year ago, gave myself some time to kind of really reflect on where do I want to go with the rest of my career? How do I want to show up in child welfare? What do I want to stand for? How do I want to lead in alignment with my values? You know, that was all really, really important to me. And I felt like in my job and in the work I was doing, I wasn't aligned with my values anymore. And so, yeah, I mean, I started my own company, Proximity Design Studio, and I'm excited, you know, to continue to build what that company stands for and lead from a place of being in my values. And from a policy point of view, that's going to be part of it. But where I am right now is that my policy work in the past has always been about how do we fix systems? How do we make systems better? How do we make systems better for kids aging out of foster care? How do we make systems better for kids in foster care? So it's always like the structures, you know, the policy, the practice, where we put our money as a government. That's not where I'm focused anymore. It's not the structures. It's not the specific policies anymore. You know, I've come to this place where I believe that systems don't change until people change. That public policy work is an inside job, meaning it starts within us. So there's a personal transformation process that I think we need to go through so that we do stand for being in service of people, not systems. And that's the process that I've been going through. And that's the process I want to help other leaders go through as well. So that when we get to the place of what policy should we work on, we've gotten to the place inside ourselves first, where we're believing in people, standing with people, and we're doing everything in service of people and not systems. And that's a long game kind of process for me, but that's where I am right now. And I want to be in that place before I get focused on specific like policy issues.
And is that something someone can learn? I mean, when you say you're going through that process, like, I mean, is that like a steps to get to that mm-hmm. point?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And so I see it as I see it as a daily practice, to be quite honest. But I think that daily practice on a bigger picture level starts with seeing yourself and the system you work in for the truth of what it really is, right? And so that's a first thing. It's like being self-reflective enough to, for me, the child welfare system in many ways is doing harm to people. So when we separate kids from their families, it's a harmful experience. And there's truth in that. And I have to see the truth in that. And then I have to see myself as a participant in a system that's doing that to people. And then I have to take accountability. I have to recognize where I'm contributing, what I'm doing. And then I have to take some kind of action. I have to do something about what I'm seeing. And so that's like, that's the process for me of seeing and taking account and then taking action. But the, honestly, the daily practice for me, personally for me, has been a practice of meditation and journaling. And so I do that daily. And that's a way to just strengthen my own self-awareness through self-reflection, so that I can be that level of honest with myself. And then, you know, the practice is letting go. Yeah, you know, there's things that you have to let go of if you're gonna go through that personal transformation process. So it's a longer conversation, I would imagine, but you know, I share it with people from time to time, and it's often, and maybe it does here, I don't know, it often comes across as sort of like a spiritual type of process or practice. And I think on some levels it is, but I do think that there's a practice to personal transformation, that at the end of the day, the goal is to be in a place where you believe in people and you invest in people, and that's what you stand for.
Matt, I just want to say that you're one of the most genuine guys I've talked to on this podcast. Thanks so much for sharing your 30 minutes with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.